accession number 4588, reel 8.
Mrs. Burkhill, tape 8. If I could go back to education again, Mrs. Burkhill, there were quite a few changes towards the end of the war with our legislation about education, and you probably heard of this 1945 Act.
44.
44 Act. Did your refugee children have the same rights under that Act as the British children?
Well, they should have the same rights when the Act became law. It came on the statute books in it was the Butler Act. It came on the statute books in 44 and became law in 48. But of course, I have always been deeply interested in education. And of course, I also was deeply interested what Parliament was doing and used to have, what is the parliamentary?
Hansard.
I also made great use of the Cambridge MP when I really wanted to be very awkward, which worked very well. My great wish was that any child who was able and had taken their school certificate and whose headmaster wanted to recommend this child to stay on in the sixth form should have the same right as any English child to go on to higher education and get their higher school certificate, from which they could go on to try for a university scholarship or get a state scholarship if their higher school certificate was good enough. I fear this was not the attitude of head office or possibly even other regions. My view was that it is the greatest mistake in the world to frustrate an intellectual child. He will become a bad citizen, and an able bad citizen is far more dangerous than an ordinary bad citizen. And these refugee children were quite fantastic in their ability. I mean, that was the most satisfying part of the work altogether. I wrote a memo to Sir Alexander Maxwell putting the case of the new Education Act before him and my plea that the able child should be able to move on to the sixth form exactly like an English child. He was, of course, very sympathetic, as he always was, with any questions obtaining to refugee children. But when he got on to head office, they were not at all pleased. Fortunately, I did not write the letter on movement paper, but on Cambridge Refugee Committee paper, of which I was chairman of the Children's Committee. And I had, of course, a great many other children to care for who were not movement children. I must say that it took me a year of bitter infighting to succeed in getting this permission to allow the children to go on to the sixth form. The result of this was that in 1 year at Cambridge, I had 12 refugee boys and girls taking the TRIPOS, of which 11 got firsts and only one got a 2-1. And she did a part 2 biochemistry and was guaranteed, which is not a bad effort. Of course, they could also get now a state scholarship on their higher school certificate, which meant they could get a place at the university which was fully financed by the state. And I am sure that looking at the list of successful Fellows of the Royal Society and members of the Royal Academy, that Great Britain does not need to be ashamed of the success of its refugee children. It was hard work, but worthwhile. Gosh, cool.
You had quite a fight there, yeah. Did you?
Just shut this off now.
I was going to ask you now, because this leads me direct into this. When you think of the way Britain handled the refugee problem in the 1930s, do you think Britain did everything she could to help the refugees? Did she behave fairly?
Well, I think, you see, you have to throw yourself back, which very few people can, to the late 30s. You must not compare things with the welfare state of the 70s and the 80s. You must remember that. And there are very few people who can honestly throw their minds back. England was in a very difficult position. I think they did all they could conceivably do. It would have been nice if we could have got a great many more people in. For 9 months before we went into the war, I never slept properly because I always thought where I could be cleverer than Adolf Hitler and get people out before he closed the gate. And this must have been true with a great many people. I don't think that we could have done more at the time. As soon as war started, the people in useful professional jobs all were allowed to go back. They used all the doctors, they used all the dentists, they used anybody who had the capacity to help the country to win the war. And the refugees were very willing to help. The people who were hard hit were, of course, the lawyers, because German law is different to British law, and it was very difficult to put them into suitable employment. We did our best, but it was, you know, impossible to give them the same niveau to which they were accustomed. But they were very courageous and did all sorts of jobs, like being bookkeepers and anything that came their way. I mean, they weren't too proud to do it. But, I mean, we in Peterhouse, of course, employed all sorts of refugees in all sorts of jobs, because I could put them in. And I mean, some of them were very educated people, but they were very glad to have a job and to be in a college where everybody was friendly and human.
Do you think the British government did enough? Did the British government do all it could have done?
Well, you see, we only had 9 months before the war started. And you've got to remember, the whole thing was a completely new question to the country. I think one must be fair that people got frightened with this influx of foreign Jewish people to whom they weren't at all accustomed, who had a completely different way of life. I think the British government did as much as they could, and I think the committees couldn't have worked harder than they did. And what we must only think about is how grateful we are that that small proportion of people got out of Central Europe through our help.
When you think of today's refugees, you know, people like the Hungarians in 1956, and more recently the Vietnamese boat people, especially all the children coming. I think of you in this respect, you know, with the children. Do you think that we should have gained lessons from the 1930s which should help us perhaps handle these problems more easily?
Well, I again think, I mean, I feel, of course, very strongly about people who are being persecuted and who one wants to help. But again, we are again in a period of unemployment. We have got to think of that. We only can take a certain number. I would like to take more, because, of course, most of those people are of Chinese background, and you cannot get harder workers and better family people than the Chinese. I always take the attitude, there are the Jews of Europe, the Jews in Africa were the Indians, and the Jews of the Far East are the Chinese, because they have all three nations the same warm family life. They are all hard-working people who will do anything to succeed and will do the best for their children. I mean, the Chinese in Malaysia are always, in my opinion, the Jews of Malaysia. And as I say, I have been in all these countries and do know what I'm talking about. Of course, the Hungarians, we did get quite a number of Hungarians out. See, that was had to be very quick work.
Yes.
There were only about 48 hours to do the job. I wish we... What saddens me, of course, is Czechoslovakia, because Czechoslovakia was the most outspoken and most rampageous people in the Kaiserlich Königlich Empire of Austria-Hungary. If anybody was going to throw chairs about in the Reichsrat, it was the Czechs. and to see them now so cowed and unwilling to free themselves is to me quite terrible. But then when I went back to Russia in the 60s, I was horrified at the change of the Russian people. Again, the elan, the willingness to talk, to take a risk, does not exist now. It is a dull lot of people.
When did this particular movement in Cambridge end, Mrs.
Well,
Burkell?
It was, of course, the refugee children's movement. The head office was Bloomsbury House. They closed down in 1948, and all the dossiers of all the children we had to go to the religious refugee committee of the child's religion. Of course, 90% of the children were Jewish. Therefore, 90% of the dossiers had to go to the Jewish Refugee Committee. Then the rest went to the Catholic Committee and the Church of England Committee. And if, though I know that I went on working, I may say I was very careful in making my own dossiers of all the children with whom I was really involved. I was not going to send all my knowledge away so that I could not cope if it was necessary. So I kept all my dossier of the children who were particularly important to me and to whom I was important. And I luckily kept my card index, which had 2,000 names, so that out of the 10,000 children approximately who came out as unaccompanied refugee children, I had 2,000 through my hands, which doesn't say that I knew them all or that they didn't move to and fro from one region to another, but it does mean that I had contact with a large number, which I think was very important. The Refugee Committee, of course, went on. I mean, the Cambridge Refugee Committee and the Children's Committee went on. So it was merely that I wasn't responsible to the movement, but whenever I did anything, I had to contact the committee of the child's religion, where, of course, I frequently got dusty answers, which was very heartbreaking, but I couldn't do anything about it. And, of course, all these children were, by that time, reasonably grown-ups, because, of course, we still call them children, but they may have been 20, 25 or so, and were in good jobs. The largest number of them, of the children, of course, remained in Great Britain. Live a perfectly normal English life, are married, and have their jobs. And I don't think they often think that they were a refugee child. They are too much part of the life of this country.
Mrs. Burkell, I know that your work with refugees is still ongoing, and probably you'll never stop being concerned from what I've heard. But for 10 years of your life, you really did devote a great deal of your time, from what it appears. This must have been an enormous responsibility for you.
Well, it was. I think the refugee children were the most satisfying work I ever did, however much I did other work, simply because they were, on the whole, such marvellous children. We had far fewer cases in the juvenile court than for the same number of English children. I mean, that is interesting. That what is very interesting is that these girls, who were very often extremely pretty, somewhat different to the English girls, yet how they kept straight and honest was quite fantastic. I had one child out of the concentration camp who went at 14 to Theresienstadt and was ultimately picked up at Belsen. And I got very involved with her after the war, of course. And she said to me, "You know, Mrs. Burkill, you could tell in Auschwitz whether somebody came out of a gute Kinderstube."
Could you translate that?
Which means you could at once tell whether somebody came from a good nursery and had a good background, even in Auschwitz, under all the strain and terror. And this was what you could say about these refugee children, that they came from good, God-fearing, honest homes. And it is what, of course, the Jesuit says, "Give me a child till six and I will make him a good Catholic." And that was very true of the refugee children. And I really did admire the way these fantastically lonely little girls always kept straight. And the temptation and the loneliness must at times been terrible, because when they moved all refugees from the coast, they dumped 200 of these lost girls between the age of 16 and 20 on our doorstep. And there they had been in good homes, they'd been happy, and they suddenly were torn away. And they were at a very dangerous age. And yet they were fantastic kids. It was really very, you know, it was a very satisfactory job.
You mentioned earlier on, you know, at this particular time when these young girls were taken from the coast, and you mentioned earlier on in our talk that there was a genuine fear that Hitler would invade.
Yes.
And surely if this had happened, you would have been at great risk with the work you had been doing for them.
Oh, but we realized that. Mm. I mean, one takes one's risk. One was on a blacklist, and that was that.
And also, during these 10 years, you must have faced many difficult problems and had to face many difficult decisions. Can you think of the most difficult thing you had to do?
Well, one of the difficult things is when one, of course, we had to deal with kidnap cases, when the Orthodox Jews kidnapped children who were in Christian homes. And that, of course, was no joke. We had a boy at Ely who was living with a schoolmaster who was Orthodox. I mean, the boy was Orthodox. And the host was Christian. And the host actually learned to cook kosher, had special cooking utensils for the boy. They did absolutely everything, and the boy was blissfully happy with these people. But it was our system to send the children for the big Jewish holidays into Jewish homes, so that they could have Passover and so on. And this boy had a relation in Letchworth. We didn't trust the relation. We got a written letter from him, signed, to say he would return the boy after Passover. The boy did not turn up. So my secretary and I, who are neither very big, went to Letchworth, went to the police station, picked out the largest policeman, and went to this man's shop, where we found the boy cleaning the shop window. And the constable moved everybody away from the shop, and we had a pretty tough time, but we got our boy back. Then we had another case where two children were kidnapped by wealthy Orthodox people, and it nearly got to a case of the high courts, which of course London dealt with that, but they were children in my region. I mean, these were, I mean, as I say, very rare cases, but they were extremely difficult, because we really did do our best as honestly and faithfully as we could. But, I mean, you got a lot of children going, I mean, not a lot, but more than I like, to go to yeshivas, which are the Jewish religious colleges, where they're not really being properly educated. And we had all that sort of trouble. We did our best to stop that, but again, it was very difficult to stop it.
Well, you know, having devoted all these years to the refugee children, and you surely must have given up so many of your other pursuits, what were the rewards? What were the rewards for you?
Well, I think it was, you see, it was a very satisfactory job, because during the war you did something constructive instead of something destructive, and that to me was extremely valuable. I mean, I think that was, to me, very important as a person. And, of course, I've always kept myself busy. My family got accustomed to this way of life, you know. And of course, when the war was over, I took on 3 Chinese Malayan children. So we had 8 children in the house. And then from then on I started to try to create a third women's college in Cambridge, which I succeeded in doing. When I had finished with that, I thought the research students were not cared for sufficiently, and I started the graduate society, which I ran for 8 years without any help from the university, accepting permission that I could do it. And then by that time I got tired and thought it was time that something should be done. And I got a discussion in the Senate House. And then I won hand over fist, because so many people I didn't know got up and said they'd been so happy as undergraduates, but so unhappy as research students, that I became a first-class priority, and I got my house and my establishment for my research students. And then after that, of course, I thought of another bright idea, that senior visitors were very unhappy. In fact, they told me so in America, so I thought I'd better do something about that. I had to again fight the university, but I created the Society of Visiting Scholars without any university help. But now it is an extremely respectable part of the university.
Mrs. Birkel, thank you very much indeed.